We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 311 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and he's Emil Evanesian. How's it going today, Emil?
Good, Dan. How are you?
I'm okay. It's an up and down week. We obviously are going to talk about Osasuna Barcelona 2-2. Mm-hmm. We are recording this today. It'll come out tomorrow on Monday, if that's when you're listening to it, or maybe even Tuesday, when Barcelona have a friendly in Saudi Arabia, which we'll probably get to very little at the very end. But unfortunately, we have to start with what is a very, very serious story. I didn't want to bypass this. It happened midweek. But for all the Messi debacle, Bartomeu's financial misgivings, mm-hmm. Roma, Liverpool, Bayern times three, whatever you want to say, whatever sad thing or melancholy thing from the last few seasons, I think the allegations against a longtime La Masia, a director, even for almost 20 years, and Albert Benages, really upsetting about the accusations, including 60 reports of sexual abuse. Again, these are allegations. These are accusations. At this point, there's going to be an investigation going on. But even now, I mean, he just left the club last week because he was brought back in the fold, you know, having left last year, then returned under Laporta. And then the second that the club, I think, caught wind of any of these things, he was ousted. Many of these incidents happening, those coming forward in the 80s and 90s. As I said, there isn't much to say. An investigation will be done. But based on Xavi's words, based on Laporta's words, it sounds like the club is in no way going to innocent until proven guilty. It sounds like, even from Laporta, that they are completely cutting ties as soon as possible, with the understanding that 60 is a lot of reports of sexual abuse, and we kind of know where this is going. So between the 71-year-old's recent exit and the sheer number of accounts, this is definitely a dark stain on, I think what makes me saddest about it is that this is a dark stain because it's involved with children. I mean, and again, I'm not reinventing the wheel here with any of these comments. It's going to be a sad thing for the club too, moving forward, because it is a dark stain on La Masia. And, you know, it always feels like La Masia and the children are always like the hope, right? They're the untouchable bastions of hope for Culés. They're the future. And I really hope that the club does everything in its power to make it as right as possible, knowing full well that no action can ever make up for this kind of wrong. Let's begin it there. And then I'll again reiterate, these are allegations, but, you know, this kind of story just sickens me. Like, I can live with and enjoy matches in Europa League as long as Barca plays well. I mean, I could talk myself into that, but there's no talking point of any nuance or anything here. This is just, it's pretty rough.
I mean, the accusations and the allegations are, I mean, it's just like the whole thing is just so like gross and grotesque. And, you know, I mean, there's no, you know, of course there should be, you know, anger and outrage and, you know, everything. But I mean, no amount of anger or outrage or anything is going to make any of the victims, you know, whole again, or, you know, nothing's ever going to undo what is by all accounts been done. And I mean, you kind of said it's not like an errant allegation. I mean, when there's 60, I mean, that's just a lot of smoke. So you would assume that there was some fire somewhere there. Like you said it yourself, there's not really anything to say. I mean, we can kind of stumble all over each other to try to, you know, be more outraged than everyone else. But I mean, it's just the whole thing is like, this sucks, you know? I mean, and it's not,
I mean, another thing you cannot, I can do on a podcast. I mean, the people in the levers of power to make sure are preventative, yeah, and make sure things like this don't happen again.
That's the biggest thing is
as much justice is found. I mean, it's both Xavi and Laporta said justice, and that's what it is. Said as much justice as you could do, you can't undo the past, but as much justice can be had. And again, the club is going to both try to distance itself, but it should also, you know, the club should hold itself accountable. And I,
what's that too? I mean, yeah, look, I mean, this happened. And look, I mean, there's also no point of like you and I just sitting here and kind of conjecturing and, you know, figuring out. Like, but the thing is, like, if this stuff was happening, and if it was happening for, you know, a decade plus or whatever it was, I mean, yeah, there needs to be accountability. And the club needs to take every conceivable step, precaution, everything to, I mean, never mind trying to atone for any of the stuff that's happened, but I mean, at least like damn well make sure that it never happens again. I mean, this just, you know, this at the very least, I mean, we should all be able to commit wholeheartedly to this, you know, and just
yeah.
I mean, it's awful, and I mean, it's just, and, yeah. And what's awful is like there's just, you see these so many, you know, you see these stories all over sports, and it's just, we like to think that, you know, some of these things when they come to light are hopefully, you know, if not deterrence or anything, but kind of shed light on the other ones. But I mean, there's stuff like this pops up all the time, and it's always, yep, just so depressing and disheartening, you know?
Yeah. And every time you think it's not me or it's not us or it's not the club I support,
yeah,
it winds up being that case. So yeah, it's for, and there's no transition. There's no easy transition for something like that. But I felt like we had this kind of start the show with that because it, you know, it could have come and gone in the news cycle, but yeah, it's something that affects La Masia in a big, big way, potentially even moving forward. So I don't want anybody blindsided about that. So I just wanted to put that information out there. Again, Xavi has comments, Laporta has comments. So the club is not trying to brush this under the rug. They're also acknowledging it. So look at their comments as well too. So anyway, yeah, it's not much more positive to talk about Osasuna, Barcelona 2-2, I think, but yeah, I think they're at least, unlike that story, here's a transition that there is some nuance here. I think as much as there's some bad to talk about with Osasuna, Barcelona, there's also some good. Yeah, I actually have some positive things to say. And then I actually have some, obviously, I think there are some negative things to go with as well. So where would you want to start with this? I feel like the right thing to do is start at the end, if you will, and work our way backwards because of the 2-2 result. But do you think there's another place to begin this match to be with, an individual performance or?
Well, I mean, I think it was not so much individual, but I think the collective, you know, just in watching the first half, you know, the early goal was great. Now, I mean, obviously it was very quickly equalized, but, you know, I mean that, but I didn't get the sense in, you know, I missed maybe the first 7 or 8 minutes of the match, but once I sat down and I was watching, kind of my impression from the first half was the two sides felt, I don't know, almost unnervingly equal. I mean, Barca were, you know, to my eyes, just decidedly not the better, more talented team. Now, they weren't markedly worse either, but you do hope in these situations that they show themselves to be just the better collective and just honestly the better collection of individual talents. I thought there was a lot more of that in the second half. Where I was a little bit annoyed with the second half was, you know, I would say probably up until the last, what would it be? Almost until Osasuna scored the second goal, Barca looked like the better team and they were able to move the ball forward in a way that they weren't in the first half. The only place where I was a little bit frustrated was it didn't feel like they had really a sting to them. A lot of those moves didn't ultimately feel very dangerous once it got into the final third, but at the very least they were maintaining possession better and moving the ball better and honestly not losing possession cheaply like they did in the first half.
I think one thing leads to another thing. I think their youngsters should be praised in this match for a lot of different reasons. I think that winds up being the through line for me, like positively. But yeah, I mean, I think it can be a bit frustrating looking at the game plan and saying Osasuna came in kind of assuming that certain players couldn't do certain things for Barcelona and they were proven right. Meanwhile, for Barcelona, which players did Barca wind up exploiting? It actually wound up being more about, you know, and this is also us taking a myopic view of looking at Barcelona games through the lens of as a culé. But, you know, what I mean by that is to say that Osasuna was setting up in a medium block and they also were putting press on at times in a 4-3-3 press, you know, pressing high. And the person they were either allowing to drive forward or attempting to press, depending on the activation, was Araujo. And I actually do have my first negative thing to say. I did this on the match review too. Some of these points are repeated, but the first negative thing I have to say about Araujo this season was that Osasuna, they basically bargained that he wasn't going to be able to break lines and and pass Barca out of pressure. And he didn't do that. And I think for Araujo, you could see that defensively, I have no qualms ever. That's why he's the first name on the defensive team sheet at least. Or maybe even the first, at this point, the way that the team looks, maybe he's the first name on the team sheet in total at this point. Yep. So I think for Araujo, yeah, I have no issues about his defending at all. I thought the switching that he and Pique were actually doing was really, really smart. And their spacing defensively on the counterattack, I think in the first half actually was pretty good. I mean, Osasuna weren't able to break through. Pique with the interceptions, he led with ball recoveries today. I thought those two in tandem worked really, really well together. Umtiti, I don't think we need to spend too much time, even though he left his man on the first goal and then he had the deflection on the second goal. So, I mean, Umtiti, unfortunately, is greatly involved in the result. But to me, he looked like a player that was not match fit. You can see the passing is there, but yes, physically, he just still doesn't have it. He's a step slow to it. I don't want to make excuse for a guy, but if you don't start in 227 days, can you expect a player to be able to get up to that level intensity wise? That said, I can't say that his teammates also helped him get up or pick up his intensity because they themselves did not look very intense. But yeah, so for Araujo, game plan wise, Osasuna was trying to force him to break them down with passing, and he didn't do that. And the other part of that was, when they played with the four at the back, well, they started with five at the back, switching to the four at the back because, well, after the goal was scored by Barcelona, because there was space with that five at the back that they were leaving it behind. Then they switched to that four at the back saying, hey, we don't need an extra third center back to worry about Luke de Jong. Like, we don't have to worry about that. And nor do we have to worry about Frankie de Jong. Frankie and Luke, as far as players on the field touching the ball in the first half, they were bottom two of everyone, all 22 players. Those two touched the ball the least in the first half. There, I finally got there. So yes, Frankie and Luke, which is really telling that Osasuna knew exactly where Barcelona would not beat them. And that is at the top of their attack.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Particularly in the first half, like, I had a difficult time trying to figure out what the attacking impetus was meant to be for Barcelona. I mean, like you said, you know, Frankie de Jong obviously has the intelligence and the talent and everything to do that, but very much wasn't in that form today. You know, that didn't come off today. And it was difficult to try to figure out what the attacking impetus actually was.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think the instructions were for Frankie de Jong today?
It's hard to just sort of instruct someone to get involved in a way where, you know, to run a foul, you know, kind of just run a field of your assignment. But he didn't seem to be given a mandate to be aggressive and to really kind of put his head down and attack. I don't exactly know what the pregame, you know, pre-match instructions would have been for him. But I mean, the only time I actually really recall meaningfully seeing him, I think there was just maybe like one passage towards the end of the first half where he was involved a little bit. But otherwise, he was just largely anonymous. And that really kind of blows my mind for someone who's so good and just literally so centrally located on the pitch in the formation. Even if he's not playing well, I feel like his involvement should be greater than what it was today.
I mean, no doubt. I mean, it even in his stats, I mean, his stats just, they show you a player that did not touch the ball, that was not involved. Mm-hmm. And even defensively, because he's playing so high, he wasn't having the same impact he does defensively. Mm-hmm. I just think his instincts that high up the field just aren't where they need to be. But also, again, he's being asked to play in that role because he's such a good player that, I mean, this is now the third manager that has said, hey, I don't care where you're most comfortable, play where we're going to be able to use you while we try to move some of the other pieces around. And so his run into the box was important because his spacing created that run in from behind by Nico Gonzalez for the first goal. And if Nico can start making that run consistently, that's what we've been saying, that's going to open up so much for Barcelona and take so much pressure off Frankie.
Yeah.
Because you can just tell that he's playing under so much weight and so much pressure. And I know some players read stuff and other players don't. I don't know about Frankie de Jong. But, you know, I mean, there was a lot of calling, and not just us or Kool-Aid or whatever. I mean, there were those out in the huge global media world that were saying, hey, Frankie de Jong, he's not one of the untouchables for Barcelona, right? So after Bayern Munich, everyone gets reactionary, and they make a list of the players that are allowed to stay at the club, and then the others who are gone, not caring about contract or sale or
actual feasibility.
Any logic to it. But I mean, if you're Frankie de Jong, if you had gone on Twitter at all for 3 days after Bayern Munich, you would have seen that like the club has already put a 70 million to 50 million price tag on you, and you're gone, and you're going to pay for a striker. I mean, of what players that are worth anything, right? Ter Stegen and Frankie de Jong are the two that are really having the ire put on, because again, the rest are just veterans that aren't worth much, and then others are probably going to have to they aren't such high wages, you have to wait for them to leave for free. But again, that we'll talk about that in like a week or two. But back to the Frankie point, you know, this is a positive, you know, roses and thorns, as I used to say in high school, like was one of our high school segments in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. So roses to Gabi, thorns to de Jong, because for what de Jong didn't do in the game, Gabi, I mean, he was great. I mean, other than, I know we're going to get to Abde at some point here, because I mean, that'll probably happen next. So other than Abde, who was the actual man of the match, I mean, Gabi to me was Barcelona's most influential player. I mean, he was just good. I mean, what was most impressive about what Gabi did, other than I think people are saying that Barca is at a point, especially against Bayern, when Thomas Müller's quotes also went viral, Barcelona literally just need desire. They need fight. They need someone to want to win the game. And Gabi is showing his personality that of all the Barcelona players, there is no doubt that 17-year-old kid wants to win or wants to get a result, or at least showing that he wants to get a result. Even if it's not on the inside, he's showing you on the outside how much he wants to get a result today. And so like the yellow card he got.
Doesn't look outwardly frustrated. I think there.
Well, he does. He looks like a 17-year-old kid mad that he can't win a game. And
you
almost want more of that. Instead of like, boo-hoo, we lost the game. You want, hey, this game is still possible. I'm mad that we're losing, or I'm mad that we conceded.
Yeah, exactly. Like the whatever kind of, if we want to say like his ire or his frustration is kind of in a more proactive, aggressive way where, he wants to be a difference maker. He's frustrated with what is happening and wants to set it right. Whereas it's not any one individual that necessarily sticks out, but you see whenever, either when there's a close call or when Barca concede, and you know, invariably the camera will pan to various players in the aftermath of the goal. And you see not just upset, but some guys, like, you see a little bit of kind of crestfallen, and it's a certain level of almost existential frustration. It's not frustrated with the situation. It's just frustration is becoming almost like a state of being for some of these guys. And you know, we talk about some of the young guys, and I think in addition to their talent, their youth and their technical skill and everything else, I think what the young guys bring a lot of is they're not conditioned. I don't even want to say conditioned, but their experiences haven't conditioned them to feel that certain frustration. Like, you know, we've talked about this with Barca for, I mean, I think we've talked about it probably a few times now when there's been frustrating results, or, you know, particularly kind of, you know, just gut punch results, kind of the way it happened against Osasuna, particularly with some of the old guard, or just like the not young guys, the non-teenagers. There is a little bit of a, oh no, here we go again sense whenever things start going wrong that seems to feed on itself and then perpetuates either a lack of activity and a lack of aggression, because you're either trying to be overly cautious to prevent making a mistake, and in trying to avoid making mistakes, you avoid even trying to do anything proactive and positive, or it's just a sense that you almost, when things go wrong, you're expecting them to snowball. And it's almost you know, these guys, in some cases, I feel like they almost manifest that, you know what I mean? Like they just, they feel like they get, you know, they get punched in the stomach and then they're like, oh no, there's probably another shot to the head coming. And invariably it comes.
And I think that is like the useful exuberance that you're right. It's, I mean, PK's comments post game, like not, he didn't really blame the youngsters, but he said, hey, we've got all these young players, almost as this out. But I think what he means is that there might be frustration for him in the locker room because, yeah, Gabby, you know, he's 17 years old. He's only played in, I mean, 100 games in his whole life or something, you know what I mean? Or 500 games in his whole life. That this game that's happening in that moment right in front of his face is his entire world. And for PK, who every time something goes wrong, it is an accumulation of all the experiences, all the good moments, all the bad moments. And it's all happening, you know, in that moment. Now, players who can block that out, sure. But you're right. I think the floodgates have opened, and they have for a long time, that Barcelona's older guard, they feel the accumulation of all that frustration all at the same time. That's why they're always speaking about, the older experienced players are always speaking about post game is a collection of results, a collection of whether the team is on an up or a down. And I find that it's telling, because when the younger players speak about a game, they speak about that game in that game, in that moment. And I think, again, it's, yes, that inexperience is how you finish top. I mean, it's how you don't finish top four, because that inexperience means you don't know how to pace yourself. You don't understand like that the season's a marathon. But right now, Barcelona desperately need players to be focused right now in the here and now on that moment in that game. But even tactically, I want to go all the way back to Gabi and the worrying thing, I guess, for not even for Barcelona, but for Frankie de Jong, it's actually a good thing, I guess, for Koulé, is that the way that Gabi is that left interior today defended on the left interior in support of Umtiti, who is not prepared to start that match, as well as Abde, who is not necessarily a great defender, if you will, or at least he's raw on experience. And Gabi somehow solidified that left side in that first half in particular, and, you know, defending horizontally, sideline to sideline. And then offensively, when Barcelona would get the ball, he basically set up in the same way that Pedri actually does, as almost a double pivot with Busquets, because De Jong was farther up the field. And so he winds up bringing the ball up very vertically, which is how he also got the assist, because he was looking more in this game for those vertical balls. And you could see how much better he is moving from that left wing back to that left interior spot. And with what he did today in that game, that is exactly what Koulé want Frankie de Jong to be. That's exactly what it is. And so the new question I bring up is that, can Pedri and Gabi coexist? I mean, I guess they can. If Pedri is playing as that high interior, if Xavi's going to play a 3-4-3 and there's two high interiors and two pivots, then Gabi could stay in as a pivot and Nico could be the other high right interior if he can figure out how to get into the other opposing box sometimes. And then Pedri's on the other side. And then we have a real question about Frankie de Jong in that rotation. And that's, again, a good problem to have. And I think Xavi is still very much tinkering, but you could clearly tell that in today's experiment, at least, you know, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but in today's game, Xavi was the beneficiary of today's experiment. And I think today's experiment, though, was a lot about the fact that Frankie de Jong was asked to play at the 10, because Luke de Jong is the sixth or seventh on the depth chart, because you and I, Emil, support, you know, I called it on the match review, injury FC. That's what this club is. Like, I know that this team should have got the win today 2-1, but also this team is in no way the team. And I mean, Frankie de Jong is being misplayed because of Luke de Jong.
Yeah, no, it's true, because there's, we talk about the need for goals all the time. Like, I feel like, you know, whenever we, you know, talk in the aftermath of a match, or whenever we're just doing a broad state of the club on the pitch thing. And I'm looking at the lineup and the formation that played today. And yeah, I mean, you have to find goals somewhere. And if Luke de Jong, who, like you said, is not the first choice, not the second choice, not the third choice, you know, I mean, just we can put him wherever we want on the pecking order. Keep going.
Now I'm thinking about Aguero and Brathwaite. Keep going.
Oh, yeah. No, I would rather have Brathwaite.
Yeah, of course.
And so, I mean, in that sense, you almost have to hide your striker, which is, you know, a really unenviable place to find yourself. So yeah, you end up having to play guys out of position and try sort of deviate from maybe the tactical plan that you would like to be running if you had a striker that you could trust and actually, you know, posed a legitimate threat up front. And so I think you're right. I mean, in the sense, Luke de Jong is in there, he's the nominal striker, but he's not attracting attention from multiple players. Definitely. I mean, maybe he's getting one person's attention, but you know, and otherwise you have to throw more resources at the very least posing a threat to the opposing defense. And those resources have to come from, like you said, the sort of the middle of midfield and sort of further back in midfield. And yeah, and like you said, I think it today it came at the expense of Frankie de Jong.
Well, yeah, I mean, and then late on in that game, the Luke de Jong question kind of comes up that, I mean, if I was manager, again, Xavi knows a lot more than me. He's still experimenting. He's still tinkering. Mm-hmm. I think defending, he was hoping that Luke de Jong's big body was important because I think I don't want to overthink it. You know, Barcelona were susceptible mm-hmm. on set pieces. So having a big body like Luke de Jong in their late yeah. game situations, mm-hmm. I understand the thinking. But I mean, I definitely would have shifted Dembele, who had yeah. an awful game, his worst game of the year by far, easily. Dembele was not good in this game. I would have shifted Dembele to the middle and brought on Demir or Ferran Jukula. If you're going to bring him in, then bring him in even 10 minutes earlier. Let him yeah. play it out just to keep that width, you know, and then just put Dembele up through the middle. Because when Coutinho came on the field, this is a big issue. Mingueza mm-hmm. replaces Nico to help with the buildup, mm-hmm. which it did. Actually, I think the minute Mingueza came on, they had their best buildup, if you will. It winds up leaving to Busquets, and then Busquets winds up starting what really was a counterattack. And so yeah. Mingueza did, offensively at least, with that buildup, help them get out of pressure. But the combination of Umtiti and Mingueza on the left side also unbalanced that defense. So when they were under pressure, Barca had no way to clear. And clearances are such a major issue. I mean, we don't even mm-hmm. say that or talk about that, but this team never properly clears anymore. And that had to do with no. building out of the back. And they haven't now done that for 2 or 3 years. And, you know, Mingueza wasn't the answer to that. And I think one of the other big reasons for that, too, is you want to talk about hold up play and speed on the wings and getting mm-hmm. yourself out of trouble. I mean, Coutinho came on the field, and no offense to Coutinho, but he was the main release valve up top when Luke de Jong came into the box to help defend. And Coutinho has, I mean, for all that Coutinho can do, holding the ball up is not what Coutinho does mm-hmm. or can do, especially in the middle of the field. So basically Barca's only release valve truly when they bypassed and didn't look for Coutinho after he gave it away twice was to look up the wings. And if you think yep. your only clearance option is to get that small piece of space for Dembele or when Abde switched or when Ferran Jukla came in, that if yep. your only clearance option is to try to thread the needle between the defender and the far touchline to get it to your winger, and that's your one shot. I mean, you can see that it didn't work out. And so Coutinho and Mingueza, those substitutes, and leaving Luke on in the way they did with that formation. Yeah, I mean, again, Xavi's experimenting, Xavi's tinkering. I have to take my advice and say, be patient. And I know people were getting on me because on the earlier show this week, earlier in the week, Levan had said that, in the second show this week, Levan had said that, you know, he just doesn't see the team getting any better. I mean, I don't think the team is getting any healthier. If anything, now this game, there's no Jordi Alba and no Memphis. So they're actually getting less healthy every match that goes by. You're going farther and farther down the depth chart. And so we're getting to a point when I look at Mingueza, Umtiti, and it's sad that I had to put Mingueza in here, but at the moment, the form he's in, Mingueza, Umtiti, Luke de Jong, Coutinho, and I say, I mean, they're all gone over the summer. Maybe Mingueza stays because of his contract, but as far as being regular members of rotation and being players that Xavi's going to trust to close out a game, like, I'm not going to break my brain for players that won't be around in 6 months. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this late game thing is happening, but how much of that do you put on the players and the personnel he has to work with? And how much of it do you have that, you know, not only does Xavi make the decision, he should be accountable for the decision, but to win a game at the end like that, you need, again, to have that fight. And it seems like no matter who the manager is, Barca also lose that fight. So are we saying it's personnel, or are we saying it's just a lack of fight based on the manager? Or is it even, you know, I don't
think it's on the man. I mean, at this point, I mean, you know, I feel like the sample size is small, and at the very least, sort of in the meat of the games, even though Barca haven't looked, you know, they haven't looked brilliant. They haven't been free scoring or, you know, some sort of like, you know, imperious genius team, but they've looked better. And there's, even when they're not playing particularly well, there's been a greater resemblance to Barca teams past, and you can get kind of faint whiffs of what the intention is and what the vision is in the plan. But I think you just said it. There's so, look, I mean, this, even at full strength, I mean, this isn't a Barca team of recent vintages where it's packed with literally some of the, you know, a handful of the absolute best players in the world. But even putting that aside, so if you take one of those rosters and then hamstring it with what, 6, 7, 8 injuries to the point where, like you said, it's, you know, you're kind of scrambling to put together a defense and you're, you know, having Luke de Jong lead the line, you know, and just, you know, you're having him up front.
Well, let me set you up for this.
It can only go so far, I think.
Yeah, let me set you up for this question. If Barcelona, the entire roster, I mean, I'm even throwing in Callado, Dani Alves, if everybody on this, if everyone who could be a first team player at FC Barcelona is all healthy, what is your 11? What is the absolute healthiest 11? And I'm setting you up for this, obviously, with the injury thing.
Yeah. Okay. So in the absence of all injuries, if everyone's available. So, I mean, I guess it would be, you know, up front, I guess Ansu Fati. I mean, I've enjoyed Memphis, but maybe Ansu Fati, Dembele, and I mean, I'd be tempted to go Memphis. And then, so that's that three. And then I mean, I guess I would go Pedri, De Jong, and God, it's tough. Or maybe Pedri, Gabi, Nico. That's where it's tough. The midfield is particularly difficult because, you know, at the back, I think I would like to have Araujo, Dani Alves. God, it's tough.
Alba, Ter Stegen. I'll finish it for you. But I mean, I had Ter Stegen, and then I had Alba, PK, Araujo, Alves, Busquets, De Jong, Gabi, Pedri, or, you know, De Jong, Nico, Gabi. One common, you know, two.
Three of those. Yeah.
Definitely Busquets and Pedri. And then Ansu, Memphis, Dembele up top, right? That's what I had.
Yeah.
And that's five of your 11 starters are missing through injury right now.
Yeah.
I mean, and then one of them is your number 10. And probably the club's most prolific player as far as attacking, and that is Ansu Fati. Yep. You're missing the golden boy. You're missing one of the most influential teenagers in world. I mean, actually voted the most influential teenager in world football in Pedri. Yeah. And then you're also missing, again, Dani Alves. And this says more about Destin and Gaetha, unfortunately. And Roberto's also out long-term injured.
Mm.
But like to say that Dani Alves might walk in to a 4-3-3 starting right back spot is very telling of where Destin and Gaetha are at the moment in their stock. And then sure. Alba, I mean, completely irreplaceable, continues to be completely irreplaceable on that left side. I mean, and then even Ter Stegen and De Jong were already raising question marks as well about their form and where they're at in Memphis before he got hurt the same way. So, I mean, you're missing Ansu, you're missing Memphis, you're missing Pedri, you're missing potentially Alves, you're missing Alba. It's just like, so at some point, again, we're not making excuses, but we're saying that the players that wound up losing this game, or not even losing this game, but, you know, the options to save a game, the options to hold on to a win are not what they're going to be in 6 months. And so it's tough because, I mean, I think we get in this cycle that we're like, okay, what's new? What's different? What is changing? The manager has changed. How are good results going to come? And one of the only things that I hold my hat on, I want to end the show kind of with talking about the positive, and that the man of the match was Abde. And we haven't really spoken about him that in Easy Abde. And so far this season, yes, Gabi is a revelation. Nico is a revelation. So honestly, between Gabi and Nico so far, Barcelona have entered into their first team two long-term starters, two long-term players. And that's a good thing. That's a good sign. It does show you that
absolutely.
This rebuilding, this process is actually working. And Abde, after a day like today, when Barca were as a unit, they were good at times, they were bad at times, you know, I think Balde, people keep yelling for Balde on the left, but I think he's going to do a lot of what Conrad De La Fuente did last year, and he'll be he'll head back to Barca B for the spring once Dani Alves gets registered, because again, Dest can play on the left if necessary. It's a shame that Demir can't join him for, you know, obvious reasons, but you know, I think Balde is, there's things in his game that Xavi still wants him to work out and figure out. But for Abde coming out of nowhere. Yeah. I mean, when I watched him with Barca B, I knew he could really dribble. And the things he can't do because he's so raw, I mean, it's tantalizing and exciting because he's going to be 20 on Thursday. And if he lets the ball run to his left foot, he could have scored a hat trick in this game. If he lets that ball run across his body, because so many times he orients his body. And I talked about this against Real Betis last week, that he orients his body to always be receiving and pushing forward with his right foot. He's so right foot dependent at this point that if it's not coming, I mean, he is on the left and he likes to cut in, but he's so fast that he can wait till he gets almost to the goal line to cut in. So he's, because of his speed, he's able to, whether he's on the left or right, to cause a bit of havoc. So he does trust himself to dribble in that way. And he just, I mean, he's such a great dribbler. Yes. But if he had any ability with his left foot to take a shot or confidence to put himself on, put all his weight on that left side, I mean, he would have had a hat trick. Like, and those are things though, like your weak foot, those are things that he's going to work on, that are going to be figured out. I mean, I want to remind everybody, he had two first team goals with Heracles last year when he came up as an 18-year-old. He had one goal with Barca B this year, and that was his fourth professional goal that he scored today against Osasuna, and it could have been the game winner. So, I mean, Abde, I keep hyping up the kids. You know how I get about Gabi and about Pedri. You know, I do this every time, Emil, but I'm going to get on the Abde train. It's leaving the station. And I'm telling everybody that I didn't know about him, and that's totally fine. But they found another one, and I'm excited about Abde, especially if he can improve.
Look, I think it comes down to it's development and health. You know, I mean the health will feed the experience, and you know that's where kind of the big blossoming happens. And you know we talk about a bunch of these young guys. So if we if we're starting to add Abde to that list, and you see I know Pedri isn't an academy product, but you know the kids essentially the bones of the next good Barca team. I mean, it's really impressive what they've got just on the first team, like actually gaining experience. So it's not guys who are in waiting or people that we're kind of holding our breath for, or guys who are getting 15 minutes here and there. Like it's like you said, these are guys that are here and they are contributing, and the competition level, neither the competition level nor the pressure of having to effectively be Barca in this, really, most difficult of moments doesn't seem to be getting to them. They're poised, they're ultra talented. And, between Nico, Gabi, Pedri, Ansu, Abde, and that is a foundation that all but, a handful of clubs in world football would absolutely kill for.
Almost basically just talking Ajax at this point, but
essentially,
they actually play an older experienced squad too. But in the case of Abde, it's weird because I heard you list all those names and then you added Abde's name. And it's this weird thing where it's a knee jerk thing. I don't want to add him to that list too quickly.
Yeah, he's not out of that level at this point.
But also with him just turning 20 on Thursday and with him being so raw and just getting into the first team, I wanted to end it on a positive, but I think Abde's performance, and I think it made him look even better because you're comparing that to what we saw from Dembélé today. And again, in Dembélé's worst match this season, and with renewal talks going on and transfer talk and all that stuff, and his contract being up in June, this game from Dembélé was, I defend his football brain. People say that he always makes the wrong decisions. And today, I don't think it was his brain. I just think he just was sloppy. He just wasn't there. Same performance that Dest had, but Dest did it against Alphonso Davies and got himself benched. Yeah. And Dembélé did it against Juan Cruz, right? Google it. What did that happen against? And so his one good action resulted in a goal. And I think Dembélé will always be, at the age of 24, that frustration, because if he had three moments of greatness today, it's 3-2. Or it's 4-2, rather.
No, that's exactly right. I think there was one other move where he sort of came close to creating a golden opportunity, but that was effectively it. Yeah. And we talk about being reactionary to various aspects of these games, and I don't want to be reactionary. I don't want to overweight this game because it's the most recent data point. And,
He was better. Dembélé was better against Bayern than he was against Osasuna. So,
Is wild.
Yeah, it tells you that also, like, don't take any individual Dembélé performance and take it to the house. He hadn't played in 4 years. So, he's going to have stinkers. Hopefully he has good ones, but he's got to renew, or else we're going to have to look at these individual matches as dictating why or why not he should renew.
Well, yeah, because, until something happens, until it's either announced that he's gone in the summer for free or he's renewing and he's sticking around, I do think this is going to be a more or less, a weekly tradition where each game is a referendum on Dembélé and his, where he is as a player and his future with the club. And we're going to have to essentially run around this same track. It's going to be like a hamster wheel until there's some sense of where he is. It's nice that I'm just happy that he's at least consistently on the pitch. Like he's gotten healthy. And so there seems to be a runway ahead of him to put together a string of games and hopefully find a rhythm and find his full match fitness and understand, who he is at this point as a player. Because like you said, he's played at best sparingly over the last 4 years. So, who is he as a player right now? And also just developing a rapport and a relationship with his teammates. I don't even know how much he's necessarily even trained over the past couple of years with a lot of these guys, let alone actually gotten out and tried to execute in meaningful competition. So in that sense, I'm hopeful. I don't even know if I'm optimistic, but I'm at least hopeful that the Dembele has a stretch of games ahead of him where he at the very least, he seems to be healthy. Like, he doesn't seem to be physically troubled by anything. So I'm hoping that a decent run of play will actually both feed his confidence and help him understand where he kind of fits with his team and fits with his teammates. But I agree. I mean, you know, today wasn't it. Like, today's not what you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Dembele, just throw it out. You know, the crazy thing is, Emil, too, I mean, Barca, well, it is crazy that Barca have to go to Saudi Arabia on Tuesday for that friendly against Boca.
These things will never not kind of blow me away when I hear about
them. So, I mean, I think people have been listening to the podcast for a while. They know both where Emil and I stand on friendlies in the midseason at, you know, just getting on a plane, having to travel all those miles.
Yes.
So I will be watching on Barca TV Plus to, you know, hope to see, because the Barca B broadcast rights are all a mess this year. So I'm going to hope that I will see Mika Marmol and Balde, and hopefully I have some reports to you and argue that the train keeps on coming, you know, as far as other young players.
Yeah. So
hopefully I get to see them against
more youngsters.
Boca Juniors, or hey, Luke de Jong could score 5 goals against Boca Juniors in Saudi Arabia and he'll turn the season around. But anyway, maybe either way, Barcelona are going to need some goals. It's Elche and Sevilla. The games that matter for the rest of the year, calendar year. Yes, the cavalry hopefully is returning with Alba and Memphis and Ansu all expected back in early 2020. Ansu now is Mallorca on, I think, the 3rd or the 4th of January. So that is supposed to be his date. But obviously, if you've been following Ansu for the last 2 years, you know that that date always gets pushed back whenever they set an exact date. So, but hopefully it's Mallorca and Barca could start putting goals in the back of the net and results start changing when Barca actually get healthy and stop being injury FC on the front line. That said, right now, Atletico Madrid, as we're recording this, is losing 2-0 to Real Madrid.
Yep.
And Real Madrid are going to win the Liga, whatever it is, what it is. But Barcelona are still, with this loss by Atletico Madrid, 5 points off of fourth place. So I know Barca can't get results, but no one can.
The good thing is that everyone seems to be standing still with Barca, which is really helpful and much appreciated.
5 or 6 straight wins in the Liga, which is a lot, but it's not, because it's FC Barcelona. So if they get healthy in from January to March and do actually what they did 2 years ago, and they run a string of a bunch of games, or 3 years ago now, I can't keep with the pandemic, whatever, but whatever year it was, the Ernesto Valverde year that wasn't unbeaten, the other year with Ernesto Valverde, where they did not win the league, but they run a string of 5 or 6. They got all the points of 7 of 8 matches, right? And they got enough to finish top 3. I mean, it was pretty comfortable that year, but for Barcelona, 5 points off of fourth place. So it feels all gloom and doom. But again, listen to an Atletico Madrid fan or a Real Sociedad fan, because they're watching their, I mean, Real Sociedad have now lost 3 straight. Rayo Vallecano is still Rayo Vallecano.
They got roasted by Betis today. Yeah,
exactly. So then Valencia is Valencia. Those are the teams in front of them. Atletico Madrid, Real Sociedad, Rayo, Valencia, and Barcelona. And so, I mean, it's top 4 is for the take. And then Real Betis have 4 points more than Atletico Madrid, but Real Betis could completely Betis this situation too. So I just want to remind everybody that other than Real Madrid and then Sevilla with 34 points, you know, 10 more than Barcelona, I think it is possible that somebody gets dragged under if Barca can get healthy. So even though this match is frustrating and these 2 points lost are frustrating and could matter at the end of the year, top 4 is still the option. Top 4 is still the goal. And then I hope that Barca can go out and actually be the better team against Elche. Just splatter Elche. I'm always a little bit mean to Elche, but they are 16th in the table. They're going to defend. So get in behind them, beat them. And then, you know, it'll be Sevilla next. And then they got to figure that one out. But Emil, I'll give you the last word.
I mean, I think you just said it though. I mean, I think the game against Elche, I think, is going to be massive, because first off, it's at home and it's against inferior competition. I mean, I know we say these things a lot and they wind up, you know, blowing up in our faces, coming back to bite us every time we say it. But this is an opponent that you need a business-like win. You know, I don't care if it's not 4-0, 5-0, something like that. Just put together a nice, solid, you know, 2-0 win, because then comes Sevilla. Look, we can try to be optimistic about that, and you know, but I'm not wild about the chances of getting 3 points against Sevilla. I mean, maybe you salvage a point, but you know, in these next 2 games before the new year, you want to get at least 3 points out of it, and Elche has the chance to do it. Mm-hmm. And then Yeah, because then there's, you go into that Christmas break also, and you'd like to go in with a modicum of positivity and optimism. Because the machine doesn't stop running. You know, the media is going to keep doing what they do. And, you know, you and I will get together and keep chatting. And, the TV pundits are going to keep doing what they do. And when you're not putting new data points out there, everyone's just going to keep kind of, you know, beating the same drum. And, you know, whatever your last results are is what people are going to judge you on. So at the very least, if they can put together a couple of, you know, ideally a good showing against Elche and honestly, just a solid, motivated, tough performance against Sevilla, almost irrespective of a result, but play strong, play tough, and sort of let the chips fall where they may. I think that would at least provide a little bit of, I don't know, optimism and encouragement going into that holiday break. And then hopefully, like you said, you get Ansu back, ideally the first week of January, and you start getting some of the other talents back. You know, Dani Alves joins the squad, and all of a sudden you have a couple of feel good situations and you have optimism and,
desire, you have intensity. And that's kind of where we're at. I mean, I looked at the tactics as much as until blood comes out of my ears, but it's going to come down to intensity and fight and holding on. And, you know, I would never criticize Osasuna. They're a good team. And Tosiem playing. Yeah. I mean, like, that's one of those things where it's like Barca should be getting a result against Osasuna on paper. Yeah. But Osasuna is a well-organized team that is right around Barcelona in the table. So these are two mid-table teams fighting it out, for 3 points. And Osasuna had home field advantage where they're good. Osasuna is good at home.
Yeah. Barca's only up 2 points on Osasuna on the table.
Yep. So I just want to see fight. Yeah. I want to see fight intensity, yeah, finish the year that way. So the way we're going to finish the year, to those listeners, as we wrap up another edition of the show, you know, I'm hoping to have another show out coming out this week. I'm supposed to go on vacation. It's the eternal struggle of how much am I allowed to get away from my family? How much trouble do I get in when I, so we are going a little bit of a holiday, a vacation. So I'm excited for that. However, again, I'm not sure exactly where the match review might be against Elche, especially I'll tell you this, if Barca failed to beat Elche, I can be honest with those who listen to this podcast this late, there's no YouTube match review coming if they lose to Elche on Saturday. I'm not doing that to myself on vacation, but if they get a good win, hey, it might happen. We also are planning on doing another show on vacation. So I'm going to be bringing my equipment like the lunatic I am. So look out for that one later in the week. So we'll see if there's anything to talk about from that one. And then again, just the rest of the holiday stuff. And maybe I'll take a little bit of a break, but we'll see that. In the meantime, if you want to keep update on what I am making and all the different content, it's Twitter and Instagram. And then the closed Facebook group, the Barcelona podcast. And then Patreon is how you get all the stuff that I make and make sure you don't miss it. It's over on Patreon and also helps us support these shows. And you can also listen to the show without the ads over there. And then on YouTube, of course, with the match reviews at the Barcelona podcast over there. And we're on our march to 10,000. So subscribe over to the YouTube channel. And until next time, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona podcast. Talk to you soon. Forza Barca.
Forza Barca.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.